Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Thursday, 19 April 2012, Jed Babin, contributing editor for American Spectator, sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage tonight. Thank you again, Michael, for trusting me with your microphone. Ladies and gentlemen, there's so much to talk about today, but it was really easy to decide what I would lead with. All right, around the show, we're going to get to the issue of, well, soldiers posing with the body parts of an Afghan suicide bomber, a lot more on the Secret Service scandal. Did you know that it's really because the whole scandal, the Secret Service scandal, it's all because the guys were guys? A revelation. We're going to tell you about the UN at its best sending computer equipment that was banned for sale to North Korea. Of course, to North Korea. We're going to set aside a whole segment, I think, to talk about Hillary Clinton counseling Kim Jong-un. I mean, this is something that you just have to listen to, and we're just going to have to talk about it. We're 800-449-8255 on the Michael Savage Show. This is just too good to be true. We're also going to talk about the perfect storm that's going to be hitting the Pentagon next January. And for all you seniors out there, I have a question for you. Not yet. Hold your horses. Hold the phones. Later in the show, I'm going to ask you about just how much you love junk mail. All right, but we've got to lead the show right now with the rest of this segment, talking about Obama's campaign. You hear stuff out of the White House, Axelrod, Pluff, Obama, Harry Reid, all the rest of them, every day, all day, but it doesn't really seem to register, does it? There's a theme here. The Wall Street Journal had a very good article yesterday in their editorial page entitled Obama's Seinfeld Strategy. Now, everybody remembers Seinfeld. Funny show about, as Jerry Seinfeld himself said, nothing. It was about nothing. It was about a bunch of self-absorbed young people dealing with their daily lives in a funny way. But it really had no import. There was no weight to it. It was vacuum-packed just really to ship to your television screen. And that's what we're getting from Obama. He's playing small ball. He's talking about little things. He's talking about straw men, and it's really, there's nothing to it. I mean, look about the Buffett rule, okay? Yeah, it's about income redistribution. It's about populism. It's about class envy. But it's really about nothing. He keeps talking, well, this is going to help balance the budget. Number one, they've already spent the money. Number two, it's small potatoes. It's what, $50 billion? Nothing. I mean, we're in $16 trillion in debt. Now he's talking about oil speculators driving up the price of gasoline and driving up the price of oil. Well, of course, it's all nonsense, but it's a little tiny issue. It's a little tiny issue. It's his enemy of the week. This is what the president wants to talk about because he doesn't want anybody talking about the big issues. And what he's really doing here is something very important, ladies and gentlemen. This is throughout this campaign. We're going to see it again and again and again and again. Obama really wants to not talk about the big issues. What Obama wants to do is to lead the media. And the media are willingly following him every single step of the way. The Obama-compliant media, all three networks, most of the newspapers, you know who they are. We don't need to talk about liberal bias in the media again. What we need to talk about is the serious issues. But the media won't talk about them because the president doesn't want them to. He has nothing on his own record. He can't talk about his own record because there's nothing to talk about that he can be proud of. So what's going on? He doesn't want to talk about the Republicans' issues, Lord only knows. He can maybe take a couple of shots at Paul Ryan's budget. But the small ball is all about this. It's steering the media. He doesn't want to talk about gasoline prices. He doesn't want to talk about the budget blowout. He doesn't want to talk about the fact that the Senate Democrats haven't passed a budget in 3 years. He wants to keep attention away from those issues. He doesn't want to talk about the coming Tax-mageddon. When we have January 1, 2013 visit us, there are going to be so many taxes going up, it's going to push this country into a recession faster than anything else possibly could. But we don't want to talk about that right now. President Obama doesn't want to talk about that right now. He wants to lead the media and the rest of the country away from that. Why? Why? Number one, because he thinks he can get away with it, and he can with this media. And number two, this is the real reason. And I want you guys to sit back, ladies and gentlemen, and think about this. President Obama is doing this. He's playing small ball because he thinks you're stupid. He thinks you're not informed. He thinks you're not very well educated. He thinks you're not going to be able to focus on these things and try to analyze them for yourself. And you know what? In ways, he's right, because he's talking to his base with that way. He's talking about the people who are not very well informed. He's talking about the people who are reliant on him and his overblown government to make a living. Actually, to take a living. To take a living away from you and the rest of us who pay taxes. So that's the people he's talking to, and he thinks, and, you know, we'll see in November. We'll see in November whether he is really right and whether or not this country is so dumb that it can fall for this line. But that's what Obama is doing. He thinks you're dumb. He thinks you're stupid. He does not think that you're going to be able to have the brain power to sit back and look at it. Look at the phony issues that we have out there, the small ball phony issues, like this whole thing about the Republicans having a war on women. I mean, the war on women is being conducted by the Obama administration and its decimation of our economy. I mean, women are not stupid. Women go to the gas pump and pay $4.50 a gallon. Women go to the grocery store and see how prices are going up. They see the dollar going down. This is not something that there's any war on women by the Republicans. It's a war on our economy by the Obama administration. So he's leading the media away. He's taking away the veneer of any legitimacy to any issues other than the ones he's setting. You know, he keeps talking about things like, well, green energy, it's the only solution. Anytime you hear Barack Obama saying that anything is the only solution to anything else, check your wallet. Because this is what's going on. We have a situation here where he's playing small ball and diverting the media and counting on the stupidity of people who are not going to take the trouble to be informed, who are not going to take the trouble to listen to the news, to talk to their neighbors, to go and find something out for themselves and rely on him and rely on Joe Biden and rely on Hillary Clinton. This is what's going on, and we're going to see this all through the campaign. There's an answer to this, and Mitt Romney kind of sort of got it right about 3 weeks ago. He stood up in a speech. I forget where it was. Romney was talking about Obama, and he was saying, well, all Obama does is set up straw men to knock down. And that's exactly right. This is part of the small ball strategy. It's part of the strategy that Obama has and will continue to use all through this campaign until he can no longer get away with it. He is going to set up these straw men, like the oil speculators. The fact of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, the price you pay at the pump is not really something that is dependent on a global market. You hear this from the Democrats on Capitol Hill every single day. Henry Waxman from California, that rat-faced little whatever. He's a creep. Anyway, the basic point is former Chairman Waxman of the House Energy Committee was saying, oh, well, this is a global market. You know, this is not something that the president can affect. Horse pucky. The fact of the matter is there are two markets for oil. Number one is a global market. Absolutely right. And the Saudis can manipulate it up and down whenever they want. They can just vary their production. There's also a domestic market. The domestic market here is from oil produced here, gasoline produced here in American refineries, and that's not dependent on the global market. What it is dependent upon is U.S. production. And what U.S. production is now is basically stalled, basically because the President of the United States and his minions refuse to open up oil leases. All you need to do, you want a proof of this? Let me give you two examples. Number one, we are going to have next year the Chinese and the Cubans drilling within 60 miles of the coast of Florida. No joke, no lie, that's what's going on. You know what we're doing off the coast of Florida? We are preparing for the oil spills that they may engender. That's what we're doing off the coast of Florida. What are we doing off the coast of Virginia? Nothing. Talk to Governor McDonnell, a very squared-away, smart conservative. He'll give you an earful. Bob McDonnell is someone who really you all ought to listen to, and he can tell you chapter and verse about why we're not doing oil and gas drilling off Virginia. Simple. The Obama administration stands in the way. The pipelines, ANWR, all the rest of this. You know, if you want to talk about the war on America's economy, you want to talk about the war on women, you want to talk about the wars that are going on here right within us and within our society, you just have to look at the Obama administration. But they don't want to talk about that. They want to talk about oil speculators driving up the price of gasoline. It's all a bunch of nonsense. And they're doing it because the media are compliant, and they're doing it because they think you're stupid. I don't think you're that stupid. I don't think you're stupid at all. I think the average American voter is a pretty doggone smart guy or gal. And we're not going to fall for this stuff. We're not going to fall for this stuff because people like myself and Michael Savage and all the rest of the people in the conservative media, we're going to be hammering on this. But Mitt Romney needs to get with the program here. Governor, let me just tell you, you were right when you were talking about how Obama sets up straw men and how Obama knocks them down, and it's all politics and it's got no relation to reality. You need to make that a theme of your campaign. You need to have a really good reaction. Every time Obama comes up with this, every time he gives a speech and puts out one of these mendacious proposals, talks about all of these terrible things that are not his fault, you need to be up in front of the microphones 10 minutes later and call him on it. Call him on it every single time, or he's going to get away with it. You and your people, you know, I think you can do this, Governor, but you got to up the game. All right, this is Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation. We're going to take a break and come right back to your calls. 800-449-8255. Stick with us.
See, I've never believed that government can or should try to solve every problem we've got. I believe that the free market is the greatest force for economic progress in human history. I agree that everybody has personal responsibility for their own lives. Everybody's got to work hard. Nothing's ever handed to us.
You know, there are so many lies packed into that little sound clip, I can't even begin to unpack it. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. This is what I mean, ladies and gentlemen. This is what I mean, and my sincere advice to Governor Romney, get out there. Call this guy. This is a man who has done more to stop the free market, who has taken jobs out of the private sector and moved them into the government. This is a guy who, you know, his culture, his whole idea, his culture is that the government will do everything for you and take everything from you. He just does not like our economy. And that's why we are going to have Taxmageddon. In January of 2013, there's going to be an awful lot of bad stuff going on in 2013. But also, it comes back to his campaign. This is a mendacious guy. He does not want to tell the truth because the truth hurts him. The truth hurts. We have gone for the longest period since the Great Depression with unemployment over 8%. This is so-called job-free recovery. Yeah, jobs have gone up and down a little bit, but there's not a recovery going on, ladies and gentlemen. Look at what's going on around the world. You see other countries. Right now we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world, except for a couple of small African dictatorships. These people on the Hill need to get with it. They need to force Obama's hand. Why can't we see Governor Romney take a good leadership role here and say, this has got to stop. Hey, Congress, you guys need to get off your duffs and pass a tax bill tomorrow that will cut the corporate tax rate. They could do that. Leave it on Harry Reid's doorstep. Leave it to Obama to say, well, we can't do that, after saying, oh, yeah, I love the free market economy. These guys are doing everything they can to kill our economy. All right, it's Jed Babin, 800-449-8255. Let's get back to the phones here. How about line 7, Mark in Sacramento. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Jed, Obama is as bad as anybody who predicted. He's terrible. But he's doing nothing worse than all the presidents before him.
However, really? How do you support that? How do you support that? He is raising taxes. We have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. We've got Obamacare. We've not been drilling. He's stopping us from drilling off our coasts. He hasn't opened up Anwar. He stopped the pipeline from Canada. Why are you saying that he's not doing anything worse? He's doing enormous damage. He's the worst president we've ever had.
I'm specifically talking on the gasoline issue.
All right, we'll talk about it.
I agree with you on everything you just said. I'm talking about the gasoline issue. Every president since Wilson has done nothing to help alleviate the gasoline problem, and they've done nothing to make us energy independent. Drilling is fine if we were to get a guarantee that the drilling of that oil, which is on American property or comes across American property, would benefit Americans. But there is no guarantee.
Wait a minute. Whoa. Well, you're as bad as Obama. You want a guarantee? This is capitalism. When you tell a company that they can go and drill somewhere, why should they not be able to sell to the highest bidder?
It has nothing to do with capitalism because it's American
oil. Whoa. It's not American oil. It belongs to the people who own the property. Some points that's the government. But then when you lease it to someone, that lease says you drill for the oil and it's your oil.
Does nothing to alleviate the oil and the gas.
You don't know that, sir. You do not know that because for a number of reasons, not the least of which, the law of supply and demand. You drill off the coast of Virginia, for example. What do you want to do? Put it on a tanker and ship it to France to refine it? No, that's stupid economically. What you're going to do is you're going to put it on a tanker and you're going to ship it to Texas to get refined, or you're going to build a refinery in Virginia. The economics of it, what you're saying economically makes zero sense.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. You know, I really appreciate when people call in who have no knowledge of the subject. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. We'll be back.
So I ask you, appeal to the better angels. Remind them. Remind them some of them have daughters. They have spouses.
The call girls were brought into contact with sensitive information. The Secret Service agents involved in a prostitution scandal in Colombia over the weekend could have compromised national security.
Well, no joke. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. Look, this business with the Secret Service, hiring call girls, throwing a big party in Cartagena, this is a very big deal, ladies and gentlemen. It even extends to perhaps as many as a dozen members of the military. This is not to be trifled with. This is something that goes really directly into the whole culture of the Obama administration. This is not something that has gone on before. The Secret Service, yeah, they've had their problems, like anybody, any group of people does. But the point of the matter is, for, I guess, about 140 years, these guys have been very good, very tough, and very effective with some tragic exceptions. But the basic point here is this is the culture. This is the permissiveness. This is what goes on in an Obama administration. But now we know why. We know why this happened. And you know how we know? Because CNN has reported it. And I just read this today, and I had to print it out. And I knew I was going to talk to you about it, but I just had to because it is so ridiculous and so laughable. Let me just read from this CNN report by Laura Smith Spark, entitled Secret Service Scandal Raises Questions of Macho Culture and Women Agents. And I quote, journalist and commentator Kiri Blakely asked in a blog post Tuesday, heard of her before, resuming the quote, asked why there are not more Secret Service agents who are female to counter this kind of bad behavior. Quote, the reason there should be more is simple. Women don't get into trouble the way men do, she wrote. Seriously, Can you imagine a bunch of Secret Service gals going on a trip to Colombia where they're scheduled to secure the environment for their boss who happens to be, oh, the most powerful man in the world? For sure. And then going and hiring a bunch of call guys, she asks. Ladies and gentlemen, let me suggest that there is a very different problem here. Whoever Kiri Blakely is, and I hope her suntan is up to speed, the basic point here is we do not have enough of a macho culture. We've been dumbing down the military. We've been doing things to make sure the military is not macho. The same thing is being done throughout the federal law enforcement community, of which the Secret Service is a very important part. Now, this scandal may go very big and very large, and the men who were involved should be fired, not allowed to retire. They should be fired. That's the point. And then you should take a look. You should bring in some folks. I know a couple of old Secret Service guys. I won't mention their names. Some of them have ties to the special operations community. Bring them in. Not as guys who are consultants. Bring them in. Put one of them as the head of the flipping Secret Service and tell them, go straighten things out. Go restore the culture. Make it the warrior law enforcement culture it needs to be and has been. That's what we need to do. We don't need at all girls. They'd be really no trouble at all. We need people who are willing to step in front of a bullet. And much more importantly, to dispatch one in the right direction so that they don't have to do that. Now, a lot of women can do this. I'm not saying there shouldn't be women in the Secret Service. What I'm saying is this is the wrong idea. Don't dumb down the culture. Don't un-macho the culture. Make sure these people, men and women, are tough enough, have the guts and the training to do the job. And the people involved in this prostitution scandal, don't allow them to retire. They don't deserve pensions. Fire them. If you can fire any civil servant these days. All right, let's go back to the phones, 800-449-8255. Let's go to line 10, Tony in Pennsylvania. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, good afternoon, sir. Hey, my question is there a possibility that these agents could have been put in a compromised position, you know, breach security? Other countries' agents getting a call girls for them and pictures or something.
Well, you know, Tony, we don't know. I mean, that's always a possibility. I mean, back in the days of the Cold War, this would have been routine. I mean, this would have been the kind of thing that the KGB would have set up. This is the kind of thing that our enemies would normally do. Now, we have a lot of enemies out there right now. Don't get me wrong. The espionage game is not over because the Cold War was over. And now we have, well, a lot of countries who might be involved in this. I mean, you don't necessarily have to look at Colombia to do something like this. I mean, who knows? You look at Venezuela, where you have a lot of terrorist groups, including those sponsored by Iran, because Iran is a very big ally of Hugo Chavez. They're, pardon me, right next door. I mean, who knows? I don't have enough information. Speculation on something like this is pretty useless. But I will tell you, Tony, what you raise is a distinct possibility, which makes it a lot worse. Now, we don't know how deep this thing goes. We don't know if these guys compromised classified information. There are all sorts of reports out there that the president's schedule was in one of the rooms that might have been, you know, it might have been seen by one of the call girls. Look, we don't know. But what you raise is a definite danger. I can't tell you that it's not or that it is, or that it happened or it didn't, because I just simply don't know. But you raise a problem there, Tony, and we have to be on guard for this all the time, really all the time. Hey, thanks for the call. Let's go, I can't resist a call from a SEAL. Line 7, Mac in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Michael Savage Show, sir. Thank you for your service.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, I haven't worked in special ops and everything. You're just speaking my conscience. The way our military is getting dumbed down. A coworker of mine in my civilian job is a Marine Reserve, and they're talking about a smaller, more efficient military. These people that say such lunacy don't understand this at all. They don't care about us. It just seems to be like you were saying. They're dumbing us down. They're making worried more about equal rights destroying us. He's taking our military down, and with it, this delineates down in the Secret Service.
Well, are you on active duty, Mac? Can I ask that?
No. I'm retired. Okay.
Well, God bless you for that. Let me ask you. I mean, we've got now new policies coming out in the Navy, which I think are pretty much going to tear down the idea of anybody reenlisting. We've got people who are doing now random breathalyzers every time someone goes on a ship. We've got people who are trying to ban smoking in the military, trying to ban smoking in the Marine Corps. I mean, for heaven's sake, smoking's not good for you. But what's your view? I mean, you're a 20-year vet. What's your view on breathalyzers every time you go back aboard ship?
I agree with a drug scanning, but not breathalyzers. I mean, I'm an evangelical believer, but I don't believe in that. I mean, you can't take it too far and just take away. I mean, you get out to sea. A ship that I was on in the Eisenhower, before I got there, they set a record for 99 straight days on the water, and then 100, and then 5 days in Singapore, and then 159 straight days. You can't expect that. That's lunacy.
Yeah. Well, the basic point is, this is the kind of thing, to me, this is the kind of thing that tells guys, we don't really want you here. We don't really think that you're motivated and well-trained and respectable. We think you're just a bunch of slugs. So every time you go on the ship, we're going to have you blow into a breathalyzer before you get on there. I mean, it's the kind of thing, yeah, all right, smoking is bad. It's really dumb. It's going to hurt you in the long run. But you know what? If you want to go and grab a butt and go up on the flight deck or, you know, up there with the, you know, on one of the catwalks and smoke a cigarette before you go to bed, you know, what the heck? These are people we need to respect. And you treat people with respect, they will reenlist. They will serve well. They will be well motivated. But all these things that come in and out of men's lives and women's lives in the military that are trivial, that are burdensome, that indicate a disrespect for the members of the military, these things we should not do. These things we cannot do. If we treat these people with respect, and these people, I do not mean that in any derogatory way, because I've been in the military. A lot of my family, pretty much all of my friends have been either in or currently in the military. You know, these guys and gals deserve our respect. They do not deserve what comes down from the Obama administration. All right, hey, Mac, thanks for the call. Let's see if we can get one in, one more at least before the break. Let's go to line two. Patrick in West Virginia. You're talking to Jed Babin. This is the Michael Savage Show, sir. Thanks for calling in.
I want to just further expand on the earlier caller's point. We don't know what took place in these hotel rooms with these girls or whoever. And if these guys aren't fired or terminated, we're always going to have this kind of that ghost out there that there's going to be a picture or some agent from some foreign country that can now has a leverage over one of these Secret Service guys or SF guys that were there. How do we know they're not compromised? I only see one solution. You have to cleanse that group that was there out. You're always going to have this over your head.
Well, I don't think we want to do that to everybody who went there. I think we want to do that to people who are involved in this party with the prostitutes. Sure. I mean, if you're stupid enough, whether you're Special Forces or Secret Service or you know, one of the crewmen on some of the aircraft, and you participated in this, you had a call girl in your room, you're gone. I mean, as far as I recall, Article 32, the Administrative Discharge Boards and the Uniform Code of Military Justice, somebody like this can be kicked in a flash. If they're an officer, they, you know, it's a little bit harder, but you can still do it. And the Secret Service agents, they're civil servants. You know, they do not deserve retirement benefits. They do not deserve pensions. These guys, I mean, the 11 who were first accused, as I understand it, have already lost their security clearances. So they're done. They're done as Secret Service agents anyway. But this is a big problem. And you're right. If there are others who were clearly at fault here, clearly at fault, participated in that party, had a prostitute in their room, those guys should be gone. It's just very simple to me. Hey, good call, Patrick. Thanks for it. One more quick one. How about line five, Teresa in Texas? Thanks for calling into the Michael Savage Show, ma'am. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make the point, this is so typical of the Obama administration, the culture that's there as to what's happened in Colombia with the Secret Service. Remember the little hot Russian hottie that got kicked out of the United States? Well, she was
The redhead. She was kind of cute.
She was getting too close to one of Obama's cabinet members. They won't say who, but...
Now, Teresa, just because it's true, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's the kind of thing that we just have to be on guard for, and we need to, or on guard against, and we need to be able to take measures to protect our secrets and the people who get involved with these things, the people who are compromised willingly and knowingly. I mean, these people are just not fit to serve in our government. All right, we're going to have, I'm sorry, Teresa, let me give you a chance to respond.
No, I agree. This is the United States of America. You got to have some respect for the office, for what you're doing. But if you're of the culture and the presence of mind of a liberal, well, I'm in this position and I can do it. You can.
Well. Yeah, Teresa, I mean, you're going down such a bad direction. I mean, didn't you learn anything from Bill Clinton? Ronald Reagan never went into the Oval Office without a coat and tie and his jacket on. And Bill, you remember what Bill and Monica were doing in the Oval, right?
Yeah, but they're back in there.
It's only worse. I'm teasing you. I'm pulling your leg, Teresa, because it is worse. It is far, far worse. And this is the worst gang that's ever infested our White House. Well, hey, thank you so much for the call. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. Hey, don't forget to order a copy of Michael's book, Trickle Down Tyranny. It's on Amazon and pretty much everywhere else you buy books. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
One of the things that she says is that she had no idea that these guys were Secret Service agents. She says she only found out a few days later when the news broke and that she was really stunned by that.
Yeah, she being one of the hookers that was entertaining our Secret Service people down in Cartagena Hotel in Colombia. This is really just very shocking, ladies and gentlemen, for one particular reason. As I said in the last segment, this shows a diminution of the warrior ethic, the warrior culture. It's something deeper. It's something that goes to the concept of duty. You know, we used to, before Bill Clinton, say character tells, and it does. But this is a question of what did these guys think about what they were actually supposed to do? I mean, these are people with top secret security clearances. These are people trusted with the protection of the President of the United States. These guys had a duty to perform. And they knowingly, when they brought these hookers into the hotel and they got drunk, they maybe compromised classified information. Character tells. Duty is what's really important. And if you don't have the character to remember your duty and perform it well, you don't belong in the Secret Service. You don't belong in the military. You don't belong in the law enforcement community. These guys sacrificed all of that, apparently, quite willingly. Topics in our next hour, starting out with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and her views about the future of Kim Jong-un. And, well, we can talk about a little bit of a missile launch from India and a failed missile launch from our friends in North Korea. Lots more on the Michael Savage Show. We got to talk still about Taxmageddon coming in January of 2013. We've got to talk about the fact. And this is a very important fight going on right now. It's going to continue to go on. The Catholic Church and the Catholic laity apparently is not willing to let go the idea that Obama was at war with them and still is with this issue about mandatory contraception being paid for under health care plans. Obamacare's coming at you. Low level, high speed. With a big, big warhead. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. We're going to take your calls in the next hour. We're also going to be talking about, I think we may save this for the last hour. This is just too good. I don't want to tip it off. I think I may have mentioned it in the opening monologue, but there's something that Harry Reid said about senior citizens. We've just got to save that and savor it. You know, Harry Reid is kind of like Joe Biden. You just wish for him to say more. Because when he does, number one, it's a big political disaster for the Democrats. And number two, you just sit back and say, my God, how could anybody be so stupid as to say that? Well, Harry Reid, having done his bit for the country in blocking Kent Conrad from bringing up a budget. Yeah, of course, you know now we're well past, I think it's probably 1,100 days since the Democrats in the Senate actually passed a budget. Now, we've got Harry Reid blocking the markup from the Senate Budget Committee yesterday. You should have seen, and you probably did on the news, all of the wonderful comments by Senator Jeff Sessions, the ranking Republican of Alabama, ranking Republican on the Budget Committee. Kent Conrad, I believe, had promised him that there would be a markup in the committee that Republicans would be able to draft and offer amendments and draft and offer other language. But, well, hey, you know, Harry Reid put his foot down, no budget. But, all right, we're just going to postpone that. We're tantalizing you a little bit, ladies and gentlemen. We've got to know what our friend Harry Reid said about senior citizens. We're also going to be talking about, well, one little fact, and let's close the hour with this. One little bit of very good news. This is reported in Washington Times today, and the reporter is Tim Devaney. He says gun sales are up 66% since the beginning of the Great Recession, providing the unexpected shot in the arm for the economy. The National Shooting Sports Foundation claims firearm sales hit $31 billion in 2011, sales increasing 30%, an increase in jobs in the gun industry by 100,000. Sounds good to me. I'll go out and buy another couple of them. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. We'll be back after the news. Stick with us.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Saddle up, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage today. Don't forget to check michaelsavage.com for the latest news. And we're at 800-449-8255. Well, we talked in the last hour about a whole bunch of things. I just got to shift right now. We've got to shift to a different subject because it seems like an awful lot of people, not necessarily us, are shooting off some missiles. Some work and some don't. The Chinese are pretty well concerned. The Indians, at the risk of mixing terms here, fired off a ICBM yesterday successfully, I might note, which has a range of about 3,100 miles, which brings pretty much most of China into range. India, of course, a nuclear nation. They are building their defenses. They are arming themselves in defense of the Chinese buildup, of course. China spending proportionally, percentage-wise, more of their gross domestic product on the military than anybody. And they're spending it on development of sophisticated weapons. The Chinese have shifted from the idea of just throwing millions of men into battle to information warfare, i.e. cyber war, and very sophisticated stealth aircraft and a whole variety of other things. The Indians have shot off that missile, and it went very well. So the Chinese are saying, maybe this is not a good thing. And perhaps, they will look at India as, India, of course, being the world's largest democracy, as more of a nation that can defend itself. Because Lord only knows, ladies and gentlemen, we do not have the ability to defend India. We probably are not as close to India as an ally as we should be. But that region seems to be undergoing a lot of changes. Now, the Japanese, of course, are trying to develop their own, well, buying ours, and further developing anti-missile systems. But there are other people out there who are not doing quite the same sort of thing. The North Koreans, everybody says, yes, they're a rogue regime. And if I hear one more time Susan Rice, our idiot UN ambassador, say, well, they're terribly isolated, I may just lose my lunch. But the basic point here is North Korea is doing what they darn well please. They almost, if it wasn't for the fact that they had their failed missile test about a week ago, they probably would have suckered Obama. Well, they had suckered Obama into the same game that's been played in the Bush administration. Every time we go into these six-party talks, yeah, Russia and China and North Korea and the United States, Japan, whatever, and they come out and they say, oh, they're going to make this promise, they're going to make that promise, we're going to send them oil. We're going to bribe them with oil and food so that they behave themselves and they don't test missiles, they don't blow nukes. Well, of course, Obama had agreed to that, and the Norks, with their new leader, Kim Jong-un, really just had a ball doing that, but they decided they were going to test this missile anyway. Oh, yeah, it was going to be to launch a weather satellite. Right. They were testing ICBM technology. It's just a miracle that the parts didn't fall in Japan. They fell in the South China Sea, and, you know, good riddance. If we really had the guts and the money, which we don't have either right now, we'd have sent a ship out there, well, like the old Glomar Explorer, which, for those who studied history, might remember in the 1960s, we sent to recover a sunken Russian submarine. It was all done secretly and very well. The basic point is we should be salvaging the Nork missile. But, again, we don't have the guts, the technology, or, most particularly, the money. What we do have is the lovely and talented Hillary Clinton. And she, of course, had some advice. Now, you got to understand, I do have some sympathy for Bill Clinton. He's lived with this woman lived around her for, I don't know what, 30-some-odd years. This is what Hillary said and her advice to Kim Jong-un. Play the tape.
If you had a chance to speak to Kim Jong-un, even a sentence or two, what would you say to him?
I would say that as a young man with your future ahead of you, be the kind of leader that can now move North Korea into the modern world, into the 21st century. Educate your people. Open up your system. Allow the talents of the North Korean people to be realized. Move away from a failed economic system that has kept so many of your people in starvation.
Oh, shut up! Shut up, shut up, shut up! Listen, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, this is our Secretary of State. She apparently thinks she's a high school guidance counselor. She's telling this guy, be all you can be. Is this an army recruiting commercial? He's already got control of the North Korean army. Hillary, babes, what are you talking about? You got to grow up and be, you know, just feed your people. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a perfect representative. Hillary Clinton, really, truly, she is a perfect representative of the Obama administration. This is their view. They can talk down to anybody, but they can offer this bizarre bozo advice. I mean, this woman apparently thinks that Kim Jong-un would listen to her on any respect. But if he did, he was going to say, oh, yeah, I really need to be a better person. I need to think about the sensitivities of my people. I need to really think. What I need to do, Hillary, you're so right. I need to hire 100 dietitians, and we're going to go out there and we're going to survey the North Korean people, and we're going to meet their needs. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the third man in line of one of the most despotic regimes the world has ever seen. All you need to know about North Korea is shown in a picture I have hanging on my office wall at home. And I wish I had brought it. I wish you could see it through the radio speakers right now. It was a satellite picture, is a satellite picture, taken of the whole Korean Peninsula. one very dark night a couple of years ago. And you look at the border. The border was superimposed by whichever intelligence agency produced this photo. Anyway, it's not classified. I don't have classified stuff. But the basic point, the Korean border is drawn in across the Korean Peninsula. And you can see it. It's a black and white photo. And what you see below the border in South Korea, it's all lit up. Yeah, I mean, there's some small patches, I guess, of farmland and lakes and whatever. But it's all lit up. There are cities and towns and people. You know, you can see that this is a vibrant economy north of the border. North of the border. You can see the Chinese border there, too. You can see this blank space. There's only one point that's lit up, the capital city, Pyongyang. That's where Kim Jong-un, and before him, Kim Jong-il, and before him, Kim whatever the grandfather's name was. These people have kept that country starving in the cold and the dark since the Korean War. And now Hillary's coming in like a high school guidance counselor to tell this man after he has fired, really, very, very openly and flaunting the deal with Obama, flaunting the sanctions against him and against the country, just fired that missile just to be in your face. And she's coming across and she's telling him as if she were a high school guidance counselor, you need to be a better person. You need to feed your people. You need to make your economy better. This is the vacuousness of liberalism. It's the vacuousness of the liberal view of the world. These people do not think in terms of reality. They don't even accept facts. They don't accept the facts that are beating them over the head. And this is why we have no effective policy, really no policy towards Iran. This is why Obama goes on and does everything he can to block Israeli action against Iran. This is why we have tolerated now for years under Obama the imposition by Iran of a bunch of terrorist groups and terrorist allies in the Venezuela in South America. Did you know that Venezuela's interior minister was a Syrian of Venezuelan descent? Tariq, I think, El-Masri is his name. And this is the man who is the interior minister of Venezuela, who can arrange for terrorist camps in that country. This is what you get from Hugo Chavez. This is what you get from the airy, vacuous view of the world when you get somebody like Barack Obama in office. Well, all I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, is if we do not work ourselves to the bone between now and November and get this guy tossed out of office on Election Day, we are all going to be deserving of what's coming afterwards. No one wants to see that. Do you really want another 4 years of this kind of foreign policy? This man holds himself up as another Reagan. This man said, oh, my foreign policy is just like Ronald Reagan's. Really? Really? You ought to ask the Brits about that. I think when the Brits decided to retake the Falkland Islands, yeah, well, who was it? Who was president then? Yeah, I think it was this guy Reagan. What did we do with the Brits and the Falklands? Yeah, we gave them intel and a lot of other support that we can't talk about at this point. What did Obama say just the other day? The other day, Obama was saying, well, we are neutral. And that neutral? 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 We're saying we are neutral when our oldest, most dependable, and strongest ally is going to be threatened by another tin pot regime in Argentina. Christine Kirchner, the lady who is now president of Argentina and who is in the process of seizing an oil company not owned by Argentina, owned by Spain, Repsol, nationalizing it, also saying, well, we're going to retake the Falklands. Neutral, Mr. Obama? Yeah. Well, I guess Mr. Obama might just get a little more counseling from Mrs. Clinton. I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, this is for all the marbles. I don't say this lightly. I really do believe it. We can't afford another 4 years of this guy. All right, Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. Coming back to your calls, 800-449-8255. Well, I guess we'll be right back. Savage. Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Michael Savage. 800-449-8255. Let's go right back to the phones. How about line six? Kyle in my resident state of Virginia. Thanks for calling the Michael Savage Show, sir. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. Hey, I just had a question. You know, we've got all the news coverage about this Secret Service scandal and all the bad things they've done, and they need to be held accountable for their actions and, you know, to protect the Secret Service and what they stand for. My question is, and I'm sure at some point they're going to get what they may or may not deserve, but, you know, what about Geithner, you know, and the tax issue? What about Eric Holder and the scandal he's in right now? And, you know, it's like it picks up a little velocity, and then somehow it just kind of dies at the vine.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kyle.
I'm sorry?
No, I'm sorry. I was almost cutting you off because I think you're raising a very big point, but go ahead.
No, I was just saying, so at what point that, you know, people that are working hard and doing the right or maybe the wrong thing, if they're held accountable for it, but people in higher office, they're not held accountable.
Well, yeah, and I think that kind of has been true through history. But what you're raising is a very big point here, and I think you're raising it indirectly but probably intentionally. One of the benefits to Obama, and I really think it is a benefit, of this whole Secret Service thing, of what's going on with the GSA clowns, this diverts people's attention from the real scandals of this administration. These scandals, I mean, Eric Holder is running an unlawful, really not unlawful, but a lawless Justice Department. I mean, TurboTax Timmy, I mean, yeah, okay, we can talk about his tax evasion and all the rest of that, but his economic advice to the president, it's not as corrupt, I think. It's intellectually corrupt, but it is not as legally corrupt as what Holder is doing. There are very big scandals here that nobody talks about. I mean, we talked about in the first hour that Obama wants to lead the media away, lead everyone's attention away from the whole problems of his record. And one of the biggest problems of his record is Eric Holder. Eric Holder has done so many things to compromise the legal system here. I mean, this is a man who should not be attorney general, who's not fit to be attorney general in the beginning. The whole point of the Mark Rich pardons and the whole business of, you don't even remember, ladies and gentlemen, from the confirmation hearings. This man was acting improperly long, long before he became attorney general. And his record as attorney general is not, you know, it's the opposite of spotless. It's one big stain. So now you see what's going on here. And Kyle, I think you're making a very important point. What we have is not a cover-up, but a diversion. And Obama's campaign is benefiting from all of this because people say, well, okay, the GSA has a big problem. It's had a problem for a long time. It's not Obama's fault. So we just kind of skip over it. And, you know, well, Obama says, well, I'm shocked that the Secret Service would hire hookers. The point of the matter is, these are diversions. They play into Obama's hand. And when he talks about small ball issues like let's go chase the oil kind of speculators and let's talk about the Buffett rule, all of these things divert the media and the rest of us from the real issues that are going on. We have all of these problems with our economy. Obama doesn't want to talk about it. He's not doing anything to solve it. The Senate Democrats are not doing anything to solve it. The House Republicans are trying to do it, but nobody reports it. And this is why, you know, I wish the Republican convention were tomorrow and let's get it over with and start the real campaign, because the press, once the convention happens, once Mitt Romney is actually the nominee, then they're going to have to at least a little bit pay attention to what he's saying and report on what he's saying, because right now they don't do it. And when you see things, look, it's been frustrating to me for years and years and years and years. When Republicans come up with really good ideas, you never hear about it. When they come up with a counter proposal to the Democrats, you never hear about it. Let's get this, move the Republican convention up. Let's start it tomorrow. Let's have it over by Monday. Let's get this going. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. Be right back.
Set.
Welcome back, Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage, and don't forget to order your copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. All right, let's get right back to the phones. How about line 10, Bill in Michigan? Welcome to the Savage Nation, sir. Thanks for calling in.
How do you do?
I'm doing great.
What do you think about Romney wanting to bomb Iran?
Well, depends on when you want to do it and how you want to do it. I'm all for it, frankly. I mean, if it were not for people like that, we would have people like Romney, we would not have any idea of dealing with Iran. I mean, we have not had an Iran policy since, since Jimmy Carter. We've tolerated the lies, the terrorism, the nuclear development. We have not done anything decisive. Well, frankly, we have not done anything at all, other than claim that they're isolated by, you know, these minuscule sanctions. You know, these sanctions that Obama's so proud of, they are absolutely meaningless. And you know why? Because our friend Obama had, immediately after these sanctions were supposedly put in, he exempted 11 European countries from them. What the heck is the point of the sanctions if you're going to immediately take and exempt all of the major customers of Iran from the sanctions? Mitt Romney is making a point. Iran represents an existential threat to our only ally in the Middle East, and I do mean our only ally, Israel. Number two, Iran is a significant threat. They are the top state sponsor of terrorism. They're listed by the State Department, which God only knows is not a big ally of the United States. Yeah, our State Department I'm talking about. They are the biggest danger. They and other countries, you know, along with them, following in their wake, are the biggest danger to the United States that exists on this planet. Now, you look back, and I don't want to go into too much more detail because I could talk about this for hours. The basic point is diplomacy has never worked. Diplomacy has never, ever worked with Iran. Now, you can ask any expert you want, and I've asked a lot of them, and I've done my own research, and I know this for a fact. Diplomacy has never, since that regime came in 1979, diplomacy has never changed the behavior of the Iranian regime. You can go on and on and on. If Mitt Romney says we ought to bomb them, I think I'm all for that. As a matter of fact, I would have started a long time ago, and I wouldn't even tell them what's coming. I wouldn't tell them when it's coming, and Iran would just have, you know, a really bad string of bad luck. Oh, gee, the Bushehr nuclear plant kind of mostly blew up last night. I wonder who happened to do that. How'd that happen? You guys just get unlucky? We've got an awful lot of stealthy stuff. We have stealth bombers. We have other stealthy systems. And you know what? I think we ought to be using them. Israel should not have to shoulder this burden themselves. So, Bill, you know, that's what I think. You still there? Well, Bill's left. Well, you know, that's sometimes what happens, ladies and gentlemen. Even the best of our call screeners, and we do have really good call screeners here. That's not what Bill said he was calling about. Fine by me. All right, going back to the phones, 800-449-8255. Let's see. How about line 7? Jim in New York, my hometown. Jim, welcome to the show.
How you doing? You know, I want to know how you feel about Romney supporting the NDAA and the Patriot Act.
Well, the National Defense Authorization Act is different every year. So I'm not so sure that Romney has supported one or the other. I think he has called for some support of the Patriot Act. I think that's a good thing. Because I think the Patriot Act, you know, really, and for those who don't remember, that is the act that passed shortly after 9/11. It authorizes a variety of surveillance on suspected terrorists and things of that nature, these investigation letters by the FBI. I think those things were necessary. I think we are stronger and safer because of those things. I don't agree with everything that's been done in pursuit of that. And the NDAA, am I correct? You're saying the National Defense Authorization Act?
Yes.
All right. Which part are you saying that Romney should or should not have supported? Because that bill usually goes about 1,000 pages.
Well, during the debate, he brought up about the indefinite detention, and he said he supported that. And that was actually fiscal year 2012.
Okay. Well, the indefinite detention business is troubling. To me, I think people, if they're American citizens, you cannot hold an American citizen against his will without due process and a speedy trial and a search warrant and for his property and arrest warrant and so forth. That, to me, is very troubling. I think what was done with Jose Padilla was wrong. I think he should have been brought to trial immediately. I don't think he should have been kept incognito in a Navy brig for years without trial. That's one thing. If it's not an American citizen, hey, you know what? Put them in Gitmo, leave them there, and, you know, if you get around to trying them by the year 2525, it's okay by me. We do not have these people, and the Supreme Court really did some grave damage to this country. I believe it was Hamdan versus Rumsfeld when they held that these guys had habeas corpus rights if they're in Gitmo. I think that is a very, very dangerous thing. Justice Scalia, in his dissent, I believe, said that this decision would cost lives. And I think that's right. We have released a lot of people from Gitmo who have gone back to the battlefield. I went to Gitmo to visit there about 5 or 6 years ago. And one of the things that I learned there was a story of a man by the name of Abdullah M. They wouldn't let me have the whole name. But Abdullah M. was captured in Afghanistan. He lost a leg in the action that caught him. We fit him with a prosthetic leg, I think to the tune of about $10,000 American. And at some point, people said, well, all right, he's reformed, he's no longer a danger, and they let him back out. And of course, Abdullah M. went back to the battlefield. He was then being pursued because he was part of a group that had captured, I believe, murdered 3 Japanese engineers. So this is what we need to do. Indefinite detention shall not be for American citizens. You have to have due process. You have to have speedy trials. That's elementary. It's constitutional law. And you can't take those rights from people by anything, whether it's the NDAA or the Patriot Act or whatever else. But if it's not an American citizen, if it's Abdul Muttalib, the failed underwear bomber from a couple of years ago, put him in Gitmo. You don't subject him to civilian interrogation by the FBI. I love my friends in the FBI, but don't get me wrong. The people who need to be interrogating these people are CIA and military intelligence. Put these folks in Gitmo and leave them there till hell freezes over, as far as I'm concerned. Does that answer your question, Jim?
Yeah, not really, but I mean, you know, I don't support Romney because he's same as Obama. He's owned by the banks.
Whoa. He's the same as Obama?
He's identical to Obama.
Really? I take it you're a Santorum supporter, because that's what came out of that idiot Rick Santorum's mouth.
No, not a Rick Santorum supporter. Not at all.
So who do you support? You support Obama, then?
No, absolutely not. I support
So who are you going to vote for? You support Ron Paul. Well, okay, Jim. Yeah, good luck. I hope he finds the missing quart of strawberries, because that's what he's been looking for, not convention delegates. All right, where are we? Let's go to line 6. David in Houston. Hey, thanks for calling in. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
I think them guys, once they prove it in Colombia, the Secret Service and the soldiers.
Yeah.
I think if they did endanger national security, I think they ought to be locked up and thrown in a federal detention center, federal prison, and not in the Marine Corps. So,
well, we'll see how that works out, David. We don't know. Look, if laws were broken, if security was compromised, if these hookers got access to classified information. Yeah, okay. I mean, these guys ought to be up on charges. I agree with you. They should not be, in any event, if they're found to have invited a prostitute back to the hotel for any purpose. These guys should be fired from the Secret Service. I'm not willing to speculate at this point. I think, as I said in the last hour, we just don't know. There's an ongoing investigation. There are going to be continuing investigations into this. You're right. Look, if federal law was broken, if security was compromised, if one of these guys gave away America's secrets, yeah, they ought to be locked up. But let's not judge them yet, because we don't know. There's a lot of explanations for this. There's not a good explanation for any of it. But I'm not willing to say at this point that somebody ought to go to jail over it. That may turn out to be the case, but not quite yet. All right, David, thanks for the call. Let's go to line 4, Matt in Alabama. Welcome to the Michael Savage Show. Thanks for calling in, sir.
Good evening, Jed. You're doing a great job covering for Dr. Savage. I appreciate your hard work.
Well, thank you. This is more fun than the law should allow. I mean, as I've often said, and at the risk of being a little off color, you know, doing talk radio is the most fun you can have with your clothes on. whether or not you're a Secret Service agent. Anyway, your call, sir.
Yes, sir. Let's start out. I've served as an enlisted member of the United States Marine Corps, and I know there's larger issues in this country than what I'm calling about, but it disgusts me. Every time I turn on the radio or watch TV with the news, all you hear about is the media not just reporting but attacking our U.S. Armed Forces. I mean, I know that whatever they've reported on, I mean, the military hasn't done, you know, the greatest jobs, I mean, with upholding their core values and whatnot. But the media attacking these members of armed forces, all it does is weaken the morale of our country and the views towards our military. I view the media as no different than a terrorist or an insurgent, because every time they report or attack our military, all it does is take members off the front lines.
Well, Matt, first off, my hat's off to you, and thank you for your service. I served in the Air Force mainly because my father, who was a World War II mud marine, forbade me from going into the Marine Corps. And his words, and I quote, God rest his soul, he said, I've done enough for both of us. He'd been to such fun vacation spots as Guadalcanal and Tarawa and Iwo Jima. So I was an REMF, and I won't say what that means on family radio, but you raise a very good point. I think, you know, between Vietnam and the Gulf War of 1991, we had a period where America really looked down on the military. And people thought that the military was not an honorable career. People went into the military because they couldn't get a job anywhere else. And all that rot gut that you used to hear from people like Bill Clinton. I think in 1991, we kind of had a short-haired epiphany when God bless the jarheads. I got to go back to the Marines. At the time, Saddam invaded Kuwait in 1990. I think it was, August or September. It had to be around there. I was in the Pentagon. I was a deputy undersecretary of defense for George H.W. Bush. And my next-door neighbor in the Pentagon was a Marine Corps brigadier general by the name of Tom Droughty. And Tom was, you know, just the quintessential Marine. And I'd heard, you know, watching CNN in the background in my office or something, that, you know, Saddam was moving in. And I just kind of, you know, walked over to Tom's office and I said, hey, what you hearing? And I was walking into his office. He was just hanging up the phone. And I asked him, you know, what's going on in Kuwait? What are you hearing? He said, I don't know. But I just hung up on the commandant and I said, if we're going, I want to be in the first lead battalion. God bless these guys. You know, every time people pick on the military, they pick on people like that. But in 1991, when our forces went into Kuwait, tossed Saddam out so quickly and expertly at so little loss of life, I think people started to have kind of an epiphany. And what they did was to say, yeah, you know, maybe the military isn't so bad. And the military got back to respect. But, and the point that you're making, and it's a very, very good point. Right now, the military is going back to its old ways. And we've seen things. I mean, horrible things have happened. I mean, this case with Sergeant Robert Bales being accused of massacring 17 Afghans. You know, we had this trivial incident a few months ago where a bunch of Marines were urinating on a couple of dead Taliban. And now we've got this business of a couple of soldiers. Apparently 2 years ago this happened. 2 years ago they had a suicide bomber blow himself up near their camp, and they survived. And some of them posed with body parts. Well, how bad is that, ladies and gentlemen? I don't think it's all that big a stinking deal. And what Matt was saying about the tendency of the military to look, the tendency of the media to look down on and frankly dump all over the Marines and the Army, the Navy, the Air Force. I think we've got to get back to saying, no, you're just not going to do that. All right, we got to take a quick break and come right back to your calls. 800-449-8255. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
I've strongly condemned what we see in those photos, as has General Allen. That behavior that was depicted in those photos absolutely violates both our regulations and, more importantly, our core values. And it's certainly not who we represent.
Oh, please. Now, stop. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, this is so wrong on so many levels. Ladies and gentlemen, Jed Babin for Michael Savage. Don't forget to check out michaelsavage.com. But and you'll see some stories about this. This whole thing surrounds an incident which apparently occurred 2 years ago in which a couple of soldiers picked up the body parts of a suicide bomber who had killed himself trying to kill them and had their pictures taken. Now, let me just suggest to you that if you were there and someone had tried to kill you and some of their parts had been strewn around and you were unscathed, you're 19 years old, you go over and you pick up a piece of this guy and say, man, I'm so glad he's dead and I'm still alive. And somebody takes your photo. Now, does that break regulations? I don't think so. Does it say we don't stand for our true values? I don't think so. And this is from a man, Leon Panetta, who is supervising the build down of our military so that we have now more admirals than ships. We have fewer aircraft than we have had since I don't know when. I mean, this is a man who is a one-man GSA. He spent over $860,000 traveling home. This is a man who doesn't know. And you know what else? And we're going to continue this. I see a lot of people calling in, and I hope you stay with us over the break because this is so important. This is so important. I don't want to let this topic go. We have, one of my defects, ladies and gentlemen, is I'm a recovered lawyer. I was an Air Force JAG. I am qualified to try court-martial cases, and I will tell you right now, when you have the Secretary of Defense says that this violates regulations, he is interfering with the military justice system. This is impermissible. This is something which he cannot do legally. So, Mr. Panetta, with all due respect, which ain't much, shut up. This is a man. We have to get our military back, ladies and gentlemen. We have to restore the military culture, which these people since Bill Clinton have been eroding. We now have this scandal, this military scandal. What do you think, America? What do you think? Again, you're 18 or 19 years old. You've been in Afghanistan for I don't know how many months. You've eaten dust and sand and MREs, and you haven't had a shower in a month or maybe two. And this guy somehow gets past the wire, and he blows himself up. And you're not hurt, and none of your buddies are hurt. Doesn't that bring a smile to your face? Does it mean that if you pick up a piece of this guy and hold it up to the camera and say, what the heck, he's dead and I'm alive, ain't that cool? Does that violate the spirit of America? No, that's human nature. That's human nature. And these kids, and a lot of them out there are kids, whether they're in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, whatever. These kids are under such unbelievable pressure, we have no idea what it's like. And now for the Secretary of Defense to stand up there, well, this violates our regulations and our way of life, and you know, it's not who we represent. Well, I beg to differ. I beg to differ. I think these guys are under so much pressure. You know what? In the olden days, the good old days, when people really respected the military and the military had more respect for itself, what would happen? The major would call in the company top sergeant and say, go fix this. A lot of guys would do a lot of push-ups, and that'd be the end of it. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. Don't let this go. All of you are on hold. I want to talk to each and every one of you about this mess. Jed Babin, 800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here. Here is Michael Savage.
We started receiving statements from top officials in Afghanistan and even from the spokesman for Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, who is now traveling in Europe. His spokesman, George Little, telling us, quote, an investigation that could lead to disciplinary measures is underway. Anyone found responsible for this inhuman conduct will be held accountable in accordance with our military justice system.
Inhuman conduct. I guess that was Barbara Starr of CNN regurgitating what she heard from the Pentagon. Ladies and gentlemen, Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation, and we're talking about this incident. I don't even want to call it a scandal. This incident in Afghanistan a couple of years ago where a suicide bomber apparently got in close to some GIs and blew himself up without killing any of our guys or hurting them. And apparently, well, from the pictures we saw in the Los Angeles Times, some of these kids picked up some parts of this bomber after they'd been swept up and put in one place and kind of held them up to the cameras, you know, saying, geez, I'm really glad I'm alive and I'm glad he's dead. And now we have another investigation. And now we have more threats from Defense Secretary Panetta. People will be held accountable for what? For being glad to be alive? For holding up something for a camera? This is not abuse of the bodies. This is not a scandal. This is not even misconduct. In a better world, in the world my father grew up in, the company commander would call in the gunny and say, Gunny, go run these guys around. Make sure this doesn't happen again. Now we're going to have the lawyers involved. Now we're going to have the media trashing the military. And I'm pretty well sick of this. I'm sick of the Obama administration putting our people in jeopardy for so long. Yeah, I know. Bush did it first, and it was wrong then. Nation building was wrong then. It's wrong now. And Obama is just compounding Bush's mistakes. But he's leaving our people there. He's leaving these things to happen. And now, oh, yes, well, we're going to investigate and we're going to punish. What are you going to do? You're going to put a 19-year-old in jail for holding up somebody's leg because the guy tried to kill him? That, to me, is the scandal. All right, let's get right back to your calls. 800-449-8255. Thank you, all of you who have held over the break. Let's go right to line one. Hank in Boston. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for your service, and it's really nice to talk to you.
Thank you, sir.
Look at this here. This is only this is being used as propaganda tools. They're setting up our military, our police, to discredit our military and dismantle the best people we have.
Oh, I agree.
There's a list of stuff. The party crashes. The ship captain that showed the videotape, the Secret Service agents, General McChrystal, the monitoring guy, the French guy that they set up with the hookup. It goes on and on and on. This is all propaganda tools to control the media and discredit our best people we have.
Well, Hank, I agree and disagree, but let me tell you why I disagree. Number one, they don't have to control the media. The media has submitted itself like slaves to the Obama administration. And they will publish any story that the Obama administration wants published. They will ignore what goes on in the Obama scandals. And they will certainly ignore anything the Republicans say. Now, the question of tearing down the military, yeah, I think there's some volition there. I think they want to do this. But I don't think there's any grand plan. This is momentum. This is the narrative. This is what these people do. And for Obama, it's all gravy because, again, this stuff and the GSA stuff, all of the little tiny things that go on, they take attention away. They take attention away from the real disasters and the big failures of the Obama administration. Obama must love this. He can stand up there and say, well, we want to look into this, and this certainly does not represent our values. And Panetta can go out there and say, in violation of the doctrine of command influence and the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and he can say, well, people who are found guilty will be held accountable. Yeah, okay, people are going to be found guilty because of what he's saying. He says this behavior, that is depicted violates our regulations. Well, okay, this is what these guys want to do. But I don't think, quite frankly, they need to lead the media. The media is begging to be led. And it's just up to us. It's up to us to be well-informed. Like I said at the very opening of the show, people are not stupid. The Obama administration, the Obama campaign is counting on you, the American people, to be stupid, to not be involved, to not be informed, to not be judgmental. Oh my God, that word, judgmental. Did I really say that? Did I really say people should be judgmental? You bet your bottom I did, because that's what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. You are free. You have the right to vote if you're over 18. It's up to you. Make a judgment. Make a judgment on facts. You've got the obligation to know what they are. All right. Hey, great call. Thanks for it. Let's go to line 6. Brett in Arizona. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Jed. Thanks for taking my call. I just really wanted to comment on Leon Panetta. I think besides being Barack Obama's pawn, he is a pathetic excuse for person that's going to lead the Department of Defense. I mean, why don't they just invite the Taliban to come mess with us more because we're so weak? And I'll tell you what, I mean, I'm saying this from the perspective as a retired military officer.
Good on you. What branch were you in?
Army.
Okay.
You know, but he's weak. He makes these generals look weak by the statements that they're made to say and the apologies that they're expected to produce. I think it's just pathetic. Moreover, well, I think.
Yeah, Brett, I think you've got some good points there, but I think it's wrong for us to equate Panetta with the Taliban. He's not the enemy. He does not deserve, you know, physical punishment or death. What he deserves is political punishment and political death. The point of the matter is, this is a guy who is betraying the confidences, the trust that has to exist between the Department of Defense and the soldiers, between the White House and the soldiers. But I think you're backing in, Brett, to a very important point. I wanted to make this point some point in the show. You have Panetta and Obama, and now sequestration coming, and we can talk about that in the next segment. We're talking about all of these things coming together to the perfect storm in the Pentagon. And what do we have? We have a bunch of compliant and complacent generals. Now, I know some of these guys. I've met most of them. Not all of them, obviously. There's thousands of generals kicking around, but you know, a lot of the top guys. I've met them, and they're decent men, I think. They're smart. They're not dummies. They wouldn't be where they are if they had been. But the point of the matter is, at what point, generals, admirals, do you resign? At what point do you say, I can't do this because it's wrong? I can't, on principle, go along with this, Mr. President, so I'm going to unpin these stars, lay them on your desk, and I'm going to drive home. I'm not going to do anything else. I'm not going to make any big deal about it. I'm just not going to serve, and I will not go along with this. The last person who did that, and I admire this man enormously, General Ron Fogelman, quit in 1996 when then-Secretary of the Air Force Sheila Widnall said, well, I'm going to punish General Terry Schwalier for the Khobar Towers bombing. General Ron Fogelman, the chief of staff of the Air Force, said, no, that's wrong, because Schwalier was not responsible. Schwalier did what he could to protect the troops. He resigned. He resigned when Widnall would not back down. How many generals have done that since then? Zero. That's a long time ago, ladies and gentlemen. That's 16 years ago. What would happen? What would happen? It's not going to happen. Well, what would happen if you had somebody like General Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, or General Jim Amos? Jim Amos just retired. I forget the name of the gentleman who's now commandant of the Marine Corps. But the basic point is, what would happen if they went in to Panetta's office and saying, you do this, I quit? You know, that's what happened, that should happen. And what would happen then, that would stop a lot of this stuff. Because resigning on principle is the biggest thing a military officer can do, short of laying his life down for his country. And it is, in a way, doing exactly that. So let's talk about that. All right, I think we've got time for one last call before the break. Let's go to line 5, Tracy in Mississippi. Thanks for calling in. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Jed. I'm so angry at how the hypocrite liberals can pick and choose when they want to tear apart our defenses, whatever they be, for the president or for the country, you know, they jeopardize national security and, oh, they're just boys being boys. Let me pretend to be a hypocritical, liberal, dumb female and say them boys over there holding up them body parts because they survived a person who purposely killed themselves trying to kill them. Oh, they're just boys being boys. It's just so.
Yeah, I mean, Tracy, you're absolutely right, and I hear the emotion in your voice. I mean, you're choking up because you're angry about this, and you're right. I mean, but let me just correct you as an editor and a writer, hypocritical liberal. It's redundant. Okay, but, you know, all kidding aside, I mean the basic point here is the media will always do this. The media, and it's a function of how the media works, but it's all also a function of how the reporters and their own biases and prejudices. I mean, you can look hard, and you will not find amongst the major media, I think, anybody with any military service. This is the people. They don't understand, Tracy. They don't understand even people like me who've never been in combat but insisted on serving. I mean, this is the kind of thing that these media liberals don't understand. And the media and the liberals and all the people in the Obama administration, because they're all, you know, radical liberals, they're not only ignorant, they don't want to learn. They have their prejudices, they have their biases. And that's all the world means to them. Hey, great call, Tracy. Thanks for it. Everybody else holding, I'm going to get to you as fast as I can. We got to take a break. This is Jed Babin for Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. Be right back.
Savage.
Given the high stakes, the LA Times defends its decision to publish, saying, quote, after careful consideration, we decided that publishing a small but representative selection of the photos would fulfill our obligation to readers to report vigorously and impartially on all aspects of the American mission in Afghanistan, including the allegation that the images reflect a breakdown in unit discipline that was endangering U.S. troops.
A breakdown in discipline that was endangering U.S. troops. It seems to me it's more dangerous to the troops to have those things published than to have something happen as it apparently did. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. I am really tired of this, ladies and gentlemen. I am sick and freaking tired of people saying, well, you know, this is just going to endanger troop discipline. Yeah, okay, there probably was a breakdown in discipline, but when you're, again, 18 or 19 years old, and I don't know if you've seen that picture on the LA Times. But the guy that I saw holding up, actually, he was apparently posing with the dead insurgent's hand on his shoulder. He couldn't have been 20. Give me a break. These guys are young men. They're fresh out of high school. They're under pressure. Somebody tried to kill them, and they're celebrating the fact that they're still alive. What in bloody hell is wrong with that? All right, let's get back to the phones. How about line 7, Kathy in Houston? Welcome to the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling in, ma'am.
No problem. Listen, here's the deal. I think that I'm going to go look up that picture because that's hysterical. And you know what? War is inhumane. It's not romper room. And these people get by with beheading Nick Berg, beheading Daniel Pearl, and
right.
Hanging our contractors. I mean, you know, these Panetta is a weenie, and he needs to change these policies and quit tying our boys' hands behind our back so that they can't, you know, they can take care of themselves. I'm not worried about backlash. These guys can take care of themselves, and obviously they did on that particular day. And I think Leon Panetta should be grateful that these guys are still alive instead of a bunch of casualties.
You know, that's a really, Kathy, let me interrupt you. That's a really, really important point, and I think people don't think about that very often. You know, we have a situation here where these guys survived and the bomber didn't. I'd like to hear a little bit anything from Leon Panetta or from Barack Obama about the fact that, yeah, we're grateful that this guy, this suicide bomber, didn't kill any of our people. Where was the issue? Where was their statement about condemning the people who killed our guys? who killed our guys when the Qurans were accidentally burned in Afghanistan a couple of months ago. These people do not, and I mean these people, the Obama administration, they do not have our troops in mind. They do not have our troops' safety in mind. They do not have our troops' well-being in mind. This is a scandal of major proportions, and we really ought to talk about it more. Kathy, thank you very much for the call. Let's get one more real quick before the break. How about line one, Tom in Connecticut? Thanks for calling the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I just I got a little annoyed when you said they're all kids. I was 17 years old when I went into service, and I didn't consider myself to be a kid. Young man, you said before. Now, that's upgrading the issue. My nephew, when he graduated from Annapolis, I said, you know, you see all these other officers? Some of these guys are real jerks. Don't be like one of them. You know, enlisted guys don't make as much money and don't live as good as you guys, but he'll do well. And he did 58 missions in Desert Storm.
Well, God bless him, Tom. And I'm sorry I have to cut you off because we're going into a hard break, but you're right. And I did not mean to demean anybody. What I meant to say is these are very, very young people. They haven't seen a lot of the world. What they've seen in Afghanistan for a very long time has been very shocking and very ugly. They're under a lot of pressure. And the fact that they are very young means I think we need to cut them a little slack. And that's what I meant when calling them kids. I meant no disparagement to our troops. I would never do that. But the basic point here is they are very young people. And what we need to do is give them the respect and the training they deserve. And not go out there like the Secretary of Defense and saying they broke regulations and they're going to be punished. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. Got to take one of those break things. Be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. We're talking about the photos taken of some U.S. soldiers holding up body parts of a failed Taliban suicide bomber who tried to kill them. All right, let's go right back to your calls at 800-449-8255, line 5, Sam.
Thank you for taking my call. I kind of agree with the previous caller, Kathy. These guys should have been getting some type of recognition or something for surviving the suicide bomber's blast. Instead, they're getting scrutinized by someone who should, you know, the top chain of command that should, you know, they should be happy the guy survived. But it just, you know, he's, and not just him, but the whole world seems to be scrutinizing the, you know, the military, trying to find every little thing, you know, they can think of that, they may do wrong or something, and just try to body slam them for it, you know?
Yeah, Sandy, you raise a good point. And, you know, this is something else I should have mentioned earlier. You raise a good point about Leon Panetta and that he should be standing up for the troops. And it's really very strange to me. Now, don't forget, Leon Panetta was CIA director before he came over to the Pentagon. And as CIA director, he stood up for his troops there. I mean, there was, gosh, I wish I remember the precise date. It was about maybe not quite that long ago. It was about 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago. He was CIA director, and there was an extraordinary editorial piece he wrote in the Washington Post standing up for the intelligence community against Congress. And he was accusing Congress of heavy-handed oversight and not appreciating what the intelligence community went through and all of the things that he really ought to be doing for the troops now. Why is he now a different person than he was at the CIA? The answer, I think, is he's had two more years of Obama. He's been brought to heel. He doesn't protect his people. This is a personality shift. I mean, this is almost Freudian, ladies and gentlemen. Why does Leon Panetta, on the one hand, stick up for the intel guys a couple of years ago, in very strong terms, taking on Nancy Pelosi right head on. And now we've got him just basically throwing the troops under the bus. A very strange man, our Secretary of Defense. All right, let's go to Sandy. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to line one, Eric in Las Vegas. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, just out there, and our listeners out there, even our other GIs out there, I went from the Gulf War, number one, and, you know, a lot of people don't understand what we've went through. You know, there's body parts laying all over. You know, these people are out to, you know, get rid of you. You know, this is a real deal. A lot of people should understand, especially the higher echelon there. Until they're on the ground, they don't really know as far as body parts and pieces, you know?
Well, Eric, I take it you've been there and done that. I mean, you were in combat at some point, I assume?
Right. I just, you know, lucky to come back, not like a cuckoo brain or something. I just, you know, worked over it. But you need to learn to accept it, what you're, because these people are out to get you. You know, and if you don't get them, they're going to get you. You're not coming back.
So you're not exactly upset if the other guy's dead and you're still alive. I mean, that's my main point. I mean, why wouldn't you have a smile on your face when somebody tries to kill you and he's dead instead?
That's right, because they, you know, they just do weird things. These people over there do weird things anyway, and the ones that are good people over in Iraq and stuff like that, they want to be here. They don't want to live like that over there. They're, you know, there's a lot of cuckoo birds over there.
And, amen.
You know, our other GIs that are listening out there, they know what I'm talking about. But the people that like to criticize about, you know, what your topic is, you know, they can stand there and criticize until they've been really there.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I've never been in combat, but, Eric, I salute you for your service, and God bless you. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't think any of us who have not been in combat can appreciate the stress, the strain, the danger, and the relief coming out. I mean, a lot of my friends have been in combat, and from what they've told me, it's something I would never want to face. Well, again, thank you for your service. All right, break. Ladies and gentlemen, there's one more topic we have to fit in, and this is one for all of you senior citizens out there. Now, we're talking, or Congress is talking, about a bill that will, of course, play to another union and preserve pensions and all the rest. We're talking about the Postal Service here, which I guess you could compare it to GSA, but that might even be unfair to GSA, because as a model of inefficiency, sloth, and basically redundancy, the U.S. Postal Service, I think, stands head and shoulders above the rest. And now we have Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, who is standing up for the rights of senior citizens to get junk mail. He doesn't want to close post offices. Now, the Postal Service, which I think, you know, again, is not exactly a model of efficiency, is losing billions a year. And there's proposals out there to close several hundred post offices that are very low trafficked around the country. And it might actually be a good idea. Save a little bit of money, maybe at least reduce the losses that come back, and we end up bailing them out every year anyway. But here, ladies and gentlemen, and this is for all you senior citizens out there, everybody over 65, I want you to listen very carefully to Harry Reid. Hit it, Mr. Vegas.
Elderly Americans rely on the United States Postal Service. Madam President, I'll come home tonight and here in my home here in Washington. And there will be some mail there. A lot of it is what some people refer to as junk mail. But for the people that are sending that mail, it's very important. And talking about seniors love to get the junk mail. It's sometimes their only way of communicating or feeling they're part of the real world. Elderly Americans, more than any other group of people in America, rely on the United States Postal Service. But unless we act quickly, thousands of post offices, as I indicated, there's more than 30,000 in America, many of them rural, will close.
Okay. Harry, all you senior citizens out there, Harry Reid says, quote, seniors love getting junk mail. It's sometimes their only way of communicating or feeling like they're part of the world. Elderly Americans, more than anyone in America, rely on the U.S. Postal Service. Okay, what I would like to know, I'd like to hear from all of you senior citizens out there, which of the junk mail that you get do you treasure most? Is it the unsolicited catalogs that you get from everything that might ever have had your address? Is it the publisher's clearinghouse? Is that what brightens your day? Do you get very good value pack coupons in the mail all the time? Which of the junk mail do you like most? Look, ladies and gentlemen, it's, and without revealing too much, it's 700 feet between my house and my mailbox. And dragging back the excess junk mail is not something I enjoy. And my post office, I don't know if it's one of the ones to be closed soon or not, but Harry Reid, he says, and he directs it right to you senior citizens, he says, you love junk mail. I don't get it. I don't know. Who loves junk mail? Junk mail, by definition, is junk. It's stuff we don't want. This is the kind of thing that you get from the Democrats. And what are they up to? They're trying to stop post offices from closing. They're trying to protect the pension guarantee, the benefits of the U.S. Postal Service. And you know what? Some of those things, actually, you know, the Postal Service might actually have some claim to preserve its pension system. But the fact of the matter is, postage goes up all the time. The use of the Postal Service goes down. Why? Because we've got email. Even, you know, people, even senior citizens, how many of you out there have email? Of course, a lot of you do. Some of you have smartphones that you use for your email. Some of you use web TV. All of these things. This drives the Postal Service out of business because they have less traffic. The answer for the Postal Service, Harry, is not to preserve junk mail. The answer for the Postal Service is to privatize it. All right, I broke my own rule and used a word that ends in I-Z-E. But the basic point here is the answer here is to make it efficient. But that's not what's going on. Harry Reid says senior citizens need more junk mail. Why? Because he's playing to the Postal Service Union and because it's an election year. And because Barack Obama wants all of those millions of postal workers to vote for him, which they are likely to do. Because they are like most civil servants. Yeah, I know the Postal Service is not in the civil service and all the rest of that. But the basic point here is they vote like government employees, which means likely they vote for Obama. So, again, seniors, what do you think? Do you really love your junk mail? I think this is an insult. I think this is an insult to everybody over the age of 65. Elderly Americans love junk mail. And you know what? It's another point to the point I've been making throughout this program. Obama and his minions think you're stupid. We're at 800-449-8255. Do you agree, seniors? Do you agree that you love your junk mail? What this is about is simply another misdirection play. They're trying to say, well, we love you. We're going to bribe you with junk mail? No, what they're doing is they're trying to support the Postal Service. They want all of those Postal Service people to vote, and they think you're not going to notice. It's the same. You know, it's the same kind of scam. It's the same kind of scam as talking about, as Obama does, the issue of the Paul Ryan budget. Now, I believe that Paul Ryan ought to be Mitt Romney's vice presidential choice for one, well, many reasons, not the least of which is that the Paul Ryan budget plan has become a centerpiece of Obama's campaign. And who better to defend it than the guy who wrote it? But what they say about the Ryan budget and trying to say that he's going to try to privatize Social Security, it's the same kind of junk, it's the same kind of fear-mongering that Harry Reid's engaging in when he says, well, seniors love junk mail and you're going to end up losing it because the Postal Service is going to close the local post office. Hey, I got news for you, Harry. The junk mail will still be delivered. It might be a day later, but the senior citizens who supposedly love junk mail will still get the garbage in their mailbox. And you know what? They'll still throw it out. It's amazing to me. These guys will say anything or do anything in order to get reelected. I guess that shouldn't surprise me. I guess it's really not amazing. They're liberals. That means they're mendacious. That means they will say anything. And Harry Reid thinks you're so stupid. He thinks you're so stupid, A, that you like junk mail, and B, that you're going to vote for Democrats because you want to preserve the faster delivery of junk mail. You sometimes have to sit back and wonder whether anybody is paying attention. Do the Obama administration and the Democrats really believe this stuff themselves? I guess maybe they do. I guess maybe they have to believe this kind of nonsense, or they wouldn't be saying it all the time. To believe otherwise would mean that they were knowingly, physically believing that some of these things, which are so bizarre and so obviously untrue, it just doesn't make any sense. Seniors hate junk mail. Seniors love junk mail. All right, this is Jed Babin for Michael Savage, coming right back to your calls. 800-449-8255. Are you over 65? What junk mail do you really like? We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. Don't forget to order your copy of Trickle Down Tyranny and check the day's stories on michaelsavage.com. All right, we're talking about Harry Reid claiming that seniors love junk mail. Now, I think this is an insult to anybody's intelligence, except probably Senator Reid's. Let's go right back to the phones. Line 2, Dewey in Washington State. Welcome to the Savage Nation, sir. You're on the air.
Howdy. Hey, the worst thing I can find at the post office is junk mail. You know, our post office put up 2 garbage cans for us to throw all that crap into. And it seems to me that the post office survives because of junk mail.
That's a good point. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think it keeps them in business, frankly. I think it has for years. And people like Harry Reid and Pelosi should be in prison. I don't know if they're ever
going to. You know, Dewey, I think you just broke the code. I really, you know, this is a profound insight you've had. Not that Harry Reid and Pelosi should be in jail. I mean, you know, if you put people in jail for being stupid liberals, it would cost too much. But the point is that the Postal Service survives on junk mail and subscriptions. You know, I think that's probably right. And it's one of the reasons they're losing money, because they charge so little to mail junk mail. You know, I think that's a very profound insight. And why does Harry Reid want to preserve junk mail for senior citizens? It's not because the senior citizens want it. It's because the Postal Service can't do without it. Dewey, you know, you are a very insightful man. I think you broke the code here. Well, I think that's part of the reason why Harry Reid is so insistent on it. All right, thanks for the call, Dewey. Let's go to line 10. Gordon in Arizona, thanks for calling in, sir. You're on the air.
Yeah, I agree with raising the rates on junk mail so that it comes close to profitability.
Well, just make it a regular first-class mail, and, you know, you'll drop all the junk mail anyway, and the people who want to still send it, fine, let them pay full freight.
But I've got one other point.
Okay.
To help them go over the top. Somebody to post Harry Reid's home address to us senior citizens. You know exactly what I'm about to say.
You want to just bury him in junk mail, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Well, yeah, I don't know. He lives somewhere in Searchlight, or he's from Searchlight, Nevada. I don't know where he lives now, but I wouldn't give that out even if I had it, which I don't. Needless to say, Senator Reid and I are not pen pals. But, you know, I think you could always send all your junk mail to him. I mean, really? It'll sit in a warehouse. It'll clog up. Oh, no, let's not do that either. Because you know what? What we send to Harry Reid costs money to open, costs money. You know who pays for it? Yeah, we do. Let's forget all of that. No, Gordon, that's a great idea. But I think the basic point here is let's just make these guys, instead of junk mail, you want to mail me a letter, put a 44-cent stamp on it or whatever it's going to cost next week, because they're going to raise the Postal Service rates every doggone chance they get. Who knows when? You know, that's a really profound idea. Let's not send stuff to Harry Reid, though, because we're going to end up paying the bill. Gordon, great call. Thanks for it. Ladies and gentlemen, I think, Well, I hate to say it, but we're coming down to very close to the end of the show here. And I just wanted to say that I very much enjoy talking with you. Do we have time for one more call, guys? I guess we do. All right, let's go to line six. Sam in Oklahoma. Let's go. You're on the air, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Jed, I just wanted to say that was spot on, your analogy of the Obama regime and the complicit media. And I just want to say he uses the language of Reagan, or he tries to sound like he's some sort of a – he tries to put conservative speech inside of a communist propagandized message. And I just thought you were spot on how you said how he set up straw men, and that's how he does everything. He sets up a straw man where there's nothing to exist so he can take over another, you know, workplace environment. He can take over any kind of, you know, thing he wants.
Yeah, Sam, thanks. I'm not going to call him a communist. I mean, it may be accurate to call him a socialist. All you need to know about Obama is he's a radical liberal. He's a redistributionist. He's someone who really pretty much doesn't like the United States. And he thinks you're stupid, so you're going to vote for him. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. Thank you so much for inviting me into Savage Nation. Jed Babin signing off. Good night.
Savage.